Welcome back, everyone. Welcome to the show. This is episode 129. Good God, 129. It's kicking off. Today, I'm speaking with Kevin Wilkinson, who is the founder of the Living Full Project. The Living Full Project is a movement that believes in the abundance of everyone in all areas of life and the ability to create a life by design rather than by default. Kev is now focusing primarily on men's workshops, so men's groups, and focusing specifically on men. But he's been in the personal development world for about 12 years after his kind of existential breakthrough, I should say. He was doing construction work and he had the cars and the girlfriend and the houses, and then things changed and he moved into personal development after becoming obsessed with psychology and the way human beings think and how he used to think and how that was detrimental without even knowing. And we had a great conversation about really applicable things in life, not necessarily just personal development, but how things are changing in economics and in politics, in all sorts of things. And this is one of the reasons why I absolutely love doing podcasts, because Kev lives about an hour north of London and I live in the very southern part of Australia. The fact that we can have a conversation in real time means that we have many, many opportunities in the 21st century that hardly any of us, including myself, truly, truly grasp. And it was great to have a chat with a fellow optimist. It was really fun. So I think that's one of the things as well. It can be really helpful in life. It's not only recognizing problems, but recognizing the need for solutions. And, you know, one of the things I think about in life right now with everything going on is something that Kev made mention of in the beginning of the podcast. And it almost feels like everything that we are that haven't had time to focus attention on, have neglected, disregarded, suppressed, is bubbling to the surface of the collective or global psyche right now. So we all have individual psyches and we have to do our own work to come to greater knowing, but we have global work as a species as well. And it feels like everything that's kicking off right now is a chance for us to really reflect and have a think about where we want to move towards and how we want to get there as a society. So this is some of the stuff that Kevin and I spoke about. It was a really great conversation. I know you will enjoy it very much, my fellow mind mates. And you know what? Without further ado, enjoy the show. This is the Living Full Project with Kevin Wilkinson. Bye-bye. Mate, Kev, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
No worries, dude. Yeah, I thought I'd press record straight away because I felt like we were already going to go into a lovely flow there before the show. So I had to press the red button.
Yeah, no prep, nothing. I love it.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, mate, to answer your question before the show, guys, just had a quick chat about the UK going back into lockdown. We just came out of lockdown here. And I think, so where I'm from in Australia, in the very south part of Australia, in Victoria, that's the state of Victoria, I believe we went through the harshest lockdown globally. But we actually haven't had a case in about close to 4 weeks now. So it was interesting times.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I heard you guys had it quite brutal out there. So are you allowed to fly and everything now then, or?
I think, well, other states are just opening their borders now, slowly but surely to us. I think the top part of Australia, Queensland, is going to be opening their borders next week for us. Mm-hmm. But if you had a look that lots of flight, like I think Qantas, came out and said that, you know, no international travel unless it's, you know, unless you take the vaccine. So, oh mate, the anti-vaxxers are going to be going nuts.
Oh, for sure. I mean, mate, I tell you what, it's funny because it's just been some interesting times of late, and everything seems to be polarized. You know, you've got the whole COVID thing, but then you've got the Black Lives Matter and all these different movements all coming to the sort of surface. And I often say that I feel like this is almost like we're being exposed to our collective shadow, you know, on a macro level. But then also that kind of, because we're forced to stay in, I don't know about you, but my own experience, especially on the first lockdown, I was just, there's some stuff where I said, all right, I'm going to learn. I'm going to learn how to play chess. I'm going to learn Spanish. I'm going to do this, this, and this. I did none of that shit. I was like, actually, and there was some stuff just I was dealing with. I just had to, like, you know, I had the time and space to actually face it rather than just be, because we can be all so busy, but life definitely moves at a different pace now. And I think there's, you know, some of the, I'm not sure what's going on, but I just feel like there's a lot of stuff being exposed for us to kind of look at and think, that's not quite right. And also, you know, for us to have the opportunity to do that with ourselves, you know.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more, mate. I think that, yeah, the collective shadow, I think it's such a lovely, pertinent phrase. You know, we have our own things that we need to deal with, but, you know, as a society and as a you know, human race, we also have things to deal with that have been, you know, suppressed or really not dealt with in the right ways for hundreds of years now, and things are rising, coming up to the top. And I can't help but be an optimist in this kind of thing. And, you know, I just have a feeling like when any resistance is placed, we have an incredible ability as individuals and as collectives to adapt to that resistance. And it always seems like, if you look back in history, it always seems like the human race, just when it was about to go to shit, managed to survive. So I hope it's going to happen like that again.
I hope so. And I think that's probably why we resonate so much with, like, a good old underdog story or, you know, the kind of the hero's journey type situation, because I think that's pretty much the foundation of how our life does go, you know, that within that adversity is a time to sort of start again. And the kind of, you know, the whole death and reborn sort of analogy is just, it's so pertinent. And again, if things need to be sort of flattened and destroyed in order for something else to grow. So, you know, the new normal doesn't necessarily mean restrictive. It can mean, it could be an opportunity to create, you know?
Mm. Yeah. What was some of the stuff that was coming up for you?
Well, for me, it was just like, oh, I'm happy doing what I'm doing. And like, so I've been in personal development for 12, 15 years, you know, like doing coaching and other bits and pieces. And I was like, there was something niggling at me. And I've got this whole sort of campaign and different products and a value of, you know, different ladder and all this type of stuff. And I wasn't quite sure. And I thought it was like, I need to work with other coaches or who are just coming up. And cause I have that in my demographic when I do Bali trips and stuff like that. And I thought it was that. And then, and last 2 or 3 years I've been getting into men's work and whatever. And I didn't really notice that, you know, the 90% of my clients are now men, and they kind of, they are similar to me. So they're not, I'd like to think, cause I love the woo woo stuff. Right. But, and I like to go, I can go far out. I'm quite comfortable there and understanding some of the stuff. I go to, you know, I attend ceremonies and part of a spiritual community, but some of the guys I work with are very much in the business field and they've kind of lost and, or not feeling they've got the bits and pieces that, you know, society said that would make them feel truly happy, only to be like miserable, and not only miserable, but guilty, feeling guilty for feeling, from feeling miserable because they live comfortable compared to most people. And I was like, oh, that's an, and I've gone through that cycle myself. I'm like, hang on a minute. Why am I like, I'm not doing that. Well, I must be need to, you know, I must need to earn more then, or I just need to party more. I just need a different person, or a different girlfriend, or a bigger house, or, you know, more. And you can get trapped on that cycle, which is interestingly enough, kind of where we're at on a bigger scale as well. But anyway, my point is that me doing my men's work journey, I was speaking to a coach of mine and he was saying, I was talking about what I was doing as far as products and everything was concerned. He said, dude, why aren't you doing men's work then? Like, you know, specifically, like, as in put your stake in the ground. This is what I do. I help men get this, 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 and this. And I'm like, oh shit. And the minute he said it, I had like tingles. I had like, you know, whenever I get like goosebumps, I know I'm onto something. I need to pay attention to it. And that's what's happened. So I've done that and nothing really changed. Some people have said to me, well, I thought that's what you did anyway.
You know? You're like, what? You all knew, but I didn't know.
Yeah, but it's weird because on some posts, when I'm referring specifically to men's work or whatever, they get loads more traction, loads more engagement, loads more DMs, and stuff just seems, you know, when you just hit something and it just feels like you're in alignment.
Mm.
And I'll be honest, this is going back to your question, is there's, for me, what I was dealing with in at the start of lockdown was that bit of confusion. And I had to, I recently looked at why I would kind of avoided looking at men's work or doing that, because I take it when I go into something, like, for instance, now I know I'm doing men's work. I'm studying as much as I can. I'm looking at other people, what they're doing. And you know, all the stuff I can learn, the literature, not just on the, from the masculine, but the feminine as well, because we need to understand both energies. Right. But within all of that work, there's some deep work that I still need to do within myself. And it became apparent that there was still element of some, father wounding for me to deal with. And I didn't even realize, you know, I didn't even recognize it. It took someone else showing me that. So, okay, well, that's one of the reasons you not step fully into that, is because for me, it's a step up. So I'm enjoying the challenge now of actually, you know, making sure I've got people that I can speak to. You know, I have what I call therapeutic supervision, you know, once a month as well. So I speak with him, and who's also specializes in men's work as well.
Oh, wow.
Senior to me as well. So I hold him in high, high regard. Jungian trained, and just a phenomenal person. So, yeah, and I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to make sure I get the support and create the environment around me to support this kind of this journey, so I can make sure that even though, so say, these guys probably aren't as far along their own development path as I am, that I can see exactly where they are at any one time, you know, which is really important. Calling yourself out on your own bullshit. I'll give you an example. There was I took on a new client the other day, and he got that kind of buyer's remorse. And I got this long-winded text about how he's not really ready yet and all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, and normally, you know, a few years back, I'm like, okay, mate, or whatever. But this time I looked at it again, and I had that response, and I looked at it and I thought, that's bullshit. Your ego sabotaging your growth. And that's what it is, because you have this fear that comes up and everything's uncertain. And then you want to resolve that tension by either running, which actually doesn't serve you, or staying there and just seeing what, hanging out with that tension a bit longer and seeing what comes, you know? So I called him on it. I just said, "No, dude, I think it's your ego, dude." He's like, "Oh my God, you're right." And I said, "Look, I wouldn't be, because as your coach, I'd be doing you a disservice if I should just let you walk." I mean, and it's not about the finances or whatever. It's not that, but I can see. And the only reason I can see that is because I used to do the same shit. And I probably will continue to if I don't catch myself, you know? So, yeah, it's just having that kind of awareness and that kind of, again, stepping into that space, you can just see it a lot easier.
Yeah, so I'm so interested in men's work, man. I'm doing a spiritual intimacy weekend with David Data. Nice. And
nice.
Yeah, coming up in 2 weeks, and John Wyland, sorry.
I love those guys. Yeah,
I love them too, man. I learned so much from them, and the fact that I had this workshop means I still have a lot more to learn. But I find men's work so fascinating. I can't tell whether or not this is just anecdotal, but you see a lot of, I'm 27 now. I see a lot of kind of like 45, 50 year old males, and they seem, you know, whether or not it's just me projecting that, but they seem like they don't have many kind of guy friends, or they seem rather kind of separated or disillusioned. You know, a perfect example is that Adam Sandler movie Click, where you get into, I'm not sure if this is, I mean, obviously women go through this kind of thing as well, but it does seem to me like men's groups are more and more in demand now. And, you know, why do you think some of this is?
I don't know. I mean, it's interesting because I think like we're at the end, we're going to go a bit more spiritual. I think we're actually moving into a different age or a different time where that kind of that, you know, the whole that patriarchal sort of thing is not really working for us. Well, not in a sense of it can do, but less, can it be an interpretation of the divine masculine and not just this kind of get stuff done and go more and creating at all costs, you know. And actually, I think I read a beautiful meme the other day or something that we're the only species that are the most intelligent species ever known, and yet we're the ones that we're actually ruining in our, you know, our own, damaging our own home, destroying our own home,
yeah,
while we're in it for the sake of, like, you know, pound notes. It's weird. And I think one of the things that we associate that to is our own self-worth, or we believe that there's something outside of us to obtain, to get this kind of inner peace, that calm and that, you know, that centeredness. And it's kind of a lie. We've been fed a lie for a long time. So that, you know, that I think it's the remnants that are around, because I'm 46 now. So those kind of, you see the, I can see the type of person you're talking about, and I see the other people that I'm just like, I wonder if there's something more, you know. And then those younger than me, you still have those, but I think more and more when you get, well, you know, sub 30s, it's, you know, people start to question things more and think, actually, there's got to be a bit more to life than this, or they're more concerned about, you know, they are concerned about the planet. They want comfortable lives and everything else, and to live well, but it doesn't need to be, definitely doesn't need to be at the detriment of someone else or other people, like a kind of survival of the fittest mentality. You know, and there was a lot of shame growing up in men in two ways. It's the shame of, for me, I would say, how we would treat the feminine. It was almost like it was the dysfunction of it. I can remember watching, like, things like Carry On movies, and it's quite acceptable to slap a woman on the ass or give a load of stick in the office and all that type of stuff. It's just, when you think about it, that's absolutely insane now, you know? And also our own, managing our own shame around our kind of rage and our anger and stuff, that can be, you know, we try and suppress that, and that kind of, that inner, and that's part of us. We do have the ability, we do have a killer within us. Under the right circumstances, anybody is capable of taking someone else's life, you know, but it doesn't necessarily, and it's owning that, you know, but owning it in a sense where you can, it doesn't come out dysfunctionally, it doesn't come out in rage or whatever. So there's been a lot of suppression for the women, for females too, but in men in particular, you know, they're not really sure how to act now. They can be you know, in my mind, it's almost like they can be oversensitive or just like still want to just show anger, aggression, and as their two sort of their go-to emotions. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's,
and it's conditioning. It's generational.
Yes. Just from what you see growing up and what your parents saw growing up. And
Yeah, I think there's another factor. I work with young people as well. I think I work with young boys, funny enough. And I work with them primarily through the medium of boxing and physicality and stuff. But some of it's because they don't want to talk, obviously, for the most part. But after you build a bit of a relationship, a bit of rapport, over time, there is some talking and some training. But I think for whatever reason, there is just a shortage of male role models, you know. There's just I don't know whether they just, men just disappear, the broken homes, all that type of stuff. Or you might see, you know, mum might get a boyfriend and then he disappears. It just seems to be like, you know, things happen, but I think it just shows a shortage of solid male leaders that we can look to, you know. And I think that's become a thing. So why it's boomed right now at this point in time, I think for anybody that's alive right now is here for a purpose. I truly believe that. It's, because for me, I'm a bit like you in your camp. What a time to be alive. I feel like I can't tell you what it is, but I feel we're on the cusp of something, of some great change. I also feel prior to that great change happening, a lot of shady stuff has to come to the surface and be addressed. And the awkward conversations and everything else. I'm like, oh my God, I need to look at your way, your point of view. No, and not agree, you know, I might not agree with it, but I can accept it and then understand where you're coming from, you know. I'm trying to be a bit more open in that way. It's not an overnight thing for sure. But, you know, I don't know about you, but whenever you've I've had a difficult conversation with, say, a partner or something like that, and you work through it and get through it, that tightens you, right? That makes you, that bonds you. That's the stuff that bonds you.
Mm.
And I think that's what's happening. If we can get to that space, rather than throwing mud and slinging, you know, and continuing this division, which is, it seems media-wise, it would seem like that's people are really content on doing that, to keep us separate. And it just doesn't feel right anymore, you know? Doesn't feel right. I remember I got trolled on a post the other day, and rather than, I just trying to understand where that person comes from, you know? Don't get me wrong, I won't get it right all the time. I was just actually into one of those open spaces. And then, again, someone was shouting at me for, like, I don't know, they're just having a bad day. But I think there's so much tension in the air right now.
Yeah.
That people are like, they can feel it. They're out there, they're kind of at their limit. So you have to kind of show some compassion.
Mm. But, yeah, no shit.
I think that's why we're on the change. I think that's why the men's work is coming forth, because there's a lot of stuff that's being shown, you know, the Me Too movement and things like that, just showing how dysfunctional we actually can be towards our feminine.
Mm. But this is my point about optimism, right? Is that as soon as we're so much more connected now on social media, which is so lovely, but soon as there is a problem that really seems to be bubbling and boiling to the surface, oh, explore a page Instagram, all these dudes doing men's work. It almost seems like there's just this kind of, as soon as there's a problem, people already have a solution now. Now, obviously you can't take a horse to water, and you have to be willing to pay you and not let your ego get in front of it and be like, you know what, I actually need to do this shit right now. I needed this work. But it just, I always have that natural kind of lenience to positivity. What was that guy trolling you about? On, like, what was your post on social media?
It was something about, what did I say? One of my posts saying, like, can we normalize men needing emotional support? And his comment was something about normalizing, can we normalize men not being defect, acting like defective women?
Like, shit, he's having a bad day.
Like, there's so much in that. Yeah. There was so much in that statement alone. Yeah. And I asked him, so that's an interesting concept. That's an interesting point of view. Could you elaborate some more? And could you explain? Could you actually define what a defective woman is? You know. So, and then someone else chimed in and said, "What did he say? Oh, yeah, the men should be stoic and emotional and all these other things, otherwise a woman sees us weak." And I did a video afterwards, because for me, I realized that the guy actually sent me a link to a blog about women, about men's vulnerability, and it's gone too far the other way. And actually these men parlaying vulnerability is just like, it's just seeing women will just see them as weak and all this type of stuff. And I thought, first of all, parlaying for me to showing vulnerability off on something like that that's manipulation if you're trying to do it that way. And I get what, there is evidence to say that women, if you lose your, if you can't present your vulnerability in a structured manner, rather than have it completely collapse, you know, John Weiland and David both speak about this. Mm-hmm. Then yeah, I agree with that. However, you can still show vulnerability in my mind. You can still show vulnerability and from a place of structure. You can still lead with vulnerability from a place of structure, you know. And I said this in the video as well. So I think women actually want that. They do want that, and they want a man that can do that. They don't want that guy that could just stoic and can't access his emotions, and just like, they might be attracted to that initially, because, you know, the strength. But after if you can't get through to your man, they won't feel safe.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
They just won't feel safe. So yeah, it's interesting. But for every, and I thought, well, these two guys were, it was great, because for me, I thought, well, I can see straight away. I was like, those two people spoke about it, but I wonder how many people are thinking the same thing, you know, or believe that. And they truly believe it, you know. And I'm like, And I sent him some guys to follow, and I sent him a book called Warrior King, King Warrior, Love and Magician, and or Magician Lover. But yeah, it was he didn't come back to me. But equally, it was just an opportunity to just share dialogue, and I actually think, oh, that's interesting. Why are you thinking like that? Mm. And me being me, I'm looking at it thinking, well, A, my post wasn't just about just women in relationships. I'm like, yeah, just that as a tiny bit. So I'm like, so straight, I can see there's massive. I'm like, okay, well, there's, and again, I feel that within that statement, I feel that there's some insecurity around how you interact with the woman.
Yeah.
Whether by those comments alone, how you interact. And, so you feel like you have to put this facade on, and that's not necessarily the case. You see what I mean? And for me, where does that insecurity come from? Is that then a relationship with your own feminine that needs to be discovered? Is it a relationship with, like, you know, is there some wounding there from the feminine? Have you been, like, you know, completely blown out, you know, or embarrassed, or is there a mother wound there? There's layers to it. Obviously, you know, I'm not going to call anybody out on that, but that was just my humble opinion on what was going on. Just judging by their statements. And it's and I said this in the video, I have to be open to this, if he has that strategy worked for him, stoic and emotional and everything else, and he has a partner that actually likes that, then that's his strategy and it's working. But for most men, I don't think that. They try that and suppress it, and that energy doesn't go anywhere. It just stays stuck, you know? Yeah. So they then numb it. Do you know what I mean? It's alcohol, gambling, porn, social media, food, those types of things. And, you know, those outlets, or they just misplace their right anger, rage or something, and explode all over the, you know? And again, that's a complete loss of structure as well. So you're not going to feel safe, right? So, and violence, you know, that type of stuff comes out. You have to be really mindful of that, because we do know, and this is me speaking from experience as well. I was one of those kind of people that I didn't feel safe to express my emotions, or sometimes I just didn't even know I was doing it. So I'd be disassociated from somebody else having feelings. And it's taken a lot of training and a lot of work to even get to that, rather than be so cold. But it's done from a space of protection. But it is actually, if I was to continue longer term, it'd be more harmful.
Yeah.
Because I had some of those vices that would try to numb everything else, you know? So,
yeah. But I mean, even just as a strategy, like, you've got to give the devil his due. And I like what you did there when you're like, you know, if that's working for him and his partner, then great as a strategy. But one thing I've learned being in a long-term relationship is that it's hard to, like, maintain a strategy other than being who you are. Like, fuck that, man. I'm too lazy to, like, hold up a strategy. I just want to be
me. That's true. And that's what I mean. There's a lot of guys. I remember a long time ago, I was working with a guy and he was gone about this book, and it's like a pickup artist book. I can't even tell you. It's one of the famous ones. And to be fair, he would pick up girls all the time, but he couldn't hold on to one.
Yeah.
He couldn't hold on to them. And then the reason being is because he had to, at some point, he had to drop that facade or whatever. And I think people know if you're being authentic on that, you know, you just feel it, you know.
Yeah.
There's something off about that guy. He's not, you know, he feels like it's a show or it's a mask.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, one of the five regrets of the dying, is that I wish I was more me. You know, I wish I was more, I look at it from a selfish perspective. You know, it's like, oh yeah, dude, I've got all these girls, got all this facade, or like my relationship's going really well because I'm holding this facade. It's like, but at the end of the day, like, I'm being someone who I'm not, you know, and maybe at the end of the day, if I'm really being more of who I am, I'll find someone, or I might pick up less or whatever, but I'll just have much more fun. Because at the end of the day, when your eyes close, you know, for a final time, the only thing you're thinking about is how you rode the boat, you know. And I have a natural proclivity for selfishness, and that my work is in being more selfless, but sure. I can't get away from that idea, man. I just like, I want to have a meaningful life.
Yeah. And be fully there. That's beautiful actually, to be fully you. And I think it takes some, when you can do that and get to a point where actually by being fully you, you may, and accept that you're not going to be for everybody. I think that's one of the main things you want to, there's a massive, you know, so the desire to be safe and belong is a real thing, you know, so no one likes to be like thought of as disliked or anything like that.
But
after a while, you get comfortable with it because you realize that it just puts more value on those that actually do want to be around you and do love you for who you are, because they're the special one. And it sounds like so corny and like obvious, but it's like, it's so obvious we're trying to make it more difficult than it actually is.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like, you know, your vibe, what's that line? Your vibe attracts your tribe or something like that. It's so true. You know, there's just like, there's certain people that are like, oh, I can't listen to this dude at all. And I'm cool with that. You know, but the guys that I want to serve are just the ones that I kind of will resonate with. And that's it. And I think that's another time that we're in now, which we're probably quite lucky in a sense, because we've been, you know, not even sort of 10 years ago, 10, 15 years ago, that wasn't the case. You had to deal with everybody. But now you've got these mediums and you either resonate with someone or you don't. But, you know, straight away, they've kind of, I was going to say bought in or sold. That sounds a bit commercial and cold. But what I'm saying is there's a connection with you. You know, there's a kind of a known, like, and trust type of feel of things, you know, straight away before you even get on a call with somebody now. I love that. So that post resonated with me or whatever. It's just nice having conversations with people. And if you're open to learning and serving somebody, then that's a beautiful thing, I think.
Mm. Yeah, there are so many things to be grateful for in this day and age. There's a lot of shit going on, but you know, the way I think you and I see the world definitely is that it's a chance for growth. You know, whenever a problem arises, a solution is just around the corner if we want to see it like that way. You said that you got into personal development work about 12 years ago. That was like before it was cool.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it was. Yeah, it's just like a thing. It's like, what is that? It's just like,
yeah. It's like uncool.
Yeah, very uncool. Very uncool. Yeah. Coaching and yeah. So I started off in NLP, then I started doing coaching, then I did hypnotherapy.
Oh, wow.
I've done all sorts of mindfulness, other bits and pieces, just loads of different modalities. But it's funny because I went into NLP and hypnotherapy in particular because I've always had this spiritual element to me, but I've, in my mind, and even this goes to show what times we were in, it's easier to be accepted if you have those types of things, because it's kind of more therapeutic. People know what a hypnotherapist is. They don't really know what a coach is.
Yeah.
They definitely don't know what, they're not interested in any meditation. You know, now they're all over. If you're a meditation teacher, you know, but at the time, no. All mindfulness for that matter. I didn't really know what that was. So yeah,
that's interesting. So what brought you into the world of personal development at a time when it wasn't really a world?
And all of this goes back to like what we were saying at the start, and it was crisis.
So it's
a crisis. I've always been quite entrepreneurial. I had different businesses and whatever. And with this particular business was, I was in construction recruitment. And I supply anything from labor to cleaners to management and stuff like that. And I worked out a way where I could actually not only just supply the labor, but for some of these other companies that weren't so big and they always had cash flow issues, I had a factoring company. So I had a credit line essentially that could fund all their wages, so pay all their company's wages, and then we would invoice their company and do it that way. It was amazing. So I was making a ton of money. A couple of houses, had the kind of the girlfriend that everyone looked off, and a couple of cars, and I thought that, well, wow, this is life. And it's funny, it's not until looking back now, I thought, I hated that job. You know, I hated it. But so I'm not sure what it's like in Australia, but in the UK, there's every now and again, the bigger firms will systematically withhold payment from the smaller firms, and some of them will drop off, and then that margin stays on their bottom line, right? So that happens now and again, and then you have to kind of wind up your company and then start again. And I got caught up in one of those cycles. Yeah. So all my companies that I was serving did. So I had four or five companies that I was looking after, servicing.
Wow.
But they all worked for two main ones that did the same sort of thing. So the shit rolls downhill essentially. Yeah. So cut a long story short, I was deep in debt to, maybe $300,000-$400,000, a lot of money. I always remember a guy coming to my house, it was around Christmas time, crying. Chippy had no money, and him and his missus are rowing, and I give him my last £500. I was just like, my God.
Wow.
And what's interesting is the environment was like, they'd be ringing and screaming, it don't matter what time in the morning it is, because I do interior fit outs, so shop fitting and stuff, they'd ring, where's this, where's that, do you know what I mean? And I've got to try and find someone to go up there. And the guys were like earning a lot of money on a weekly basis, but they're living hand to mouth. So what would happen is they would spend it, because they're working 18 hours or whatever, the environment was like very much work hard, play hard.
Yeah.
Loads of cocaine, strippers, gambling, alcohol, those types of things. They'd be away, send a bit of money home to the missus, keep her quiet. And then the rest would just get, every time they'd be asking for subs. I'm like, dude, you're earning like, you're taking more home than I am.
Yeah.
And yet you're like, I don't get it. So anyway, so that happened. I had to let go of my houses, lost the car. And then at the same time, decided to break up with the girlfriend because we were just in a very toxic place. That wasn't good. I didn't recognize myself really. Mm-hmm. So I was living, I moved out. I lived above a fish and chip shop on a mattress, living on a mattress above there. And I used to go down and eat chips. I didn't even realize that I was depressed, but I actually was. And then I decided to go to a school. Yeah. So that happened. I was there for like 6 months. I went to a school reunion and I hate those things. I decided to go to, this one. And I met a friend of mine that was just come back from Ireland. And he said, I'm a CBT, I'm a psychotherapist and a hypnotherapist. So he said he wants to keep his hours up. So do you want to do some work with me? I said, oh yeah, all right. So I started doing that. It soon became apparent I was getting my confidence back, and that was it. I just got the bug. I was like, I want to do what you do. I think I could do this.
Yeah.
And because I've studied martial arts as well for a long time, and there was some of the stuff we do was a lot along the Zen philosophy and all that type of stuff. And we, even in the school I was in, I watched What the Bleep and The Secret, certain things like that. That was like, oh, that's completely different to what I'm used to. I'm used to thinking. So I was just, I call it those, that year, I called it the sort of the year of the university of YouTube. So I'd literally fall asleep. Yes, fall asleep listening to Wayne Dyer, Deepak Chopra, Tony Robbins, anybody I could get my hands on, and then I finally got in a place where I was managed to get some sort of part-time job, and then started paying for courses, and then it just carried on from there, really.
That's amazing, man. I just can't believe, you say something like the University of YouTube now in 2020 makes a hell of a lot of sense, but 2008, 2009, 2010, no one's doing that. No one's listening to podcasts. No one's doing what you do. That's like a really pragmatic approach to life. It sounds like you always have had that because you had that entrepreneurial mindset and all that kind of thing. But just to put it into context for everyone, I think that's important. No one's doing this pre-2010 except you're kind of doing this. It's awesome.
Yeah. I think, like I say, what's interesting is, it still blows my mind now when you start looking at some of these, how old some of these books are.
Yep.
God, how small, I say that and I'm like, God, this book was written in 1970 something. I'm like, damn, how many people must have read this book? 10?
Yeah.
We definitely, and I've always said this to some people that, is it, and I've come to my own conclusion now, but at the time I was like, is it because I'm in the same environment that I see other people doing the same sort of thing, or is it expanding? And I can safely say, I think it's definitely expanding now, but at the time it just felt like there's a few niche people, and then you go to a few seminars and you see the same people there and whatever. But after a while it started to grow. And I think obviously the States had the jump on us for sure. The UK, We're a bit kind of uptight in the UK and a bit reserved and everything else. And a lot of some of that stuff is very Americanized, and we don't want to, you know, we don't get up and start massaging each other and high-fiving each other and shit. Oh, like
exactly.
That.
Exactly.
I've done it. It's uncomfortable. We're like, yeah. Oh, I don't. It feels a bit icky. But all right, the contents go. Yeah, dancing.
I know.
I've done it, but I'm like, it's not. That's not me. That's just not my thing either. But it's
yeah,
not
yeah.
Sitting in the UK, yeah.
I get all that, but like, because you can understand that physiology changes the way you think.
Yeah,
and you
massively.
Get
yeah.
into it. You're like, oh yeah. It feels amazing. Yeah, yeah. We're the same as you, man. We're all convicts from the UK down here. So
that's it. Oh, of course. Yeah, yeah.
We all have that kind of tall poppy syndrome thing too. Don't get ahead of yourself. Like
that's it. Yeah,
which can be really it can really inhibit our growth. But then you know, we look in America and go, maybe they're going too far. So we both need to kind of like find that happy place.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, that was the journey, and I think it's been. I think learning that and going back to sort of, I realize how important environment really is as well. Having kind of certain people around you and other people, not so much. And as I was growing, I was noticing some of the people, obviously I wasn't in that kind of that work environment anymore, and the types of women, and you know, that's another story, but the types of women I was attracting and the friends I was keeping. And it's funny because some of my friends that I didn't think I thought I'd always speak to, they've just disappeared, you know? And it's not like we fell out or anything. They're just kind of just gone.
Yeah.
And it's almost like, and that for me, that shows a different, you know, there really is, that is a great example of how we can live in, we're living in the same world, but experiencing a completely different reality. So my environment has definitely helped me with my growth and being selective around that. And it's just kind of, it makes it easier to be, just put yourself in a place and like, and that stuff and thinking and everything else just rubs off on you.
It really does.
And energy.
And we can create these environments online now. Like, you know, look at how you and I hooked up, dude. Like
it was
awesome. It's so awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I love about doing a podcast. You know, this podcast is so, it's just so fun. I tell everyone, like, just do a podcast. It's so fun. It's just an excuse to catch up with like a potential stranger, an acquaintance, and then just become best mates with them. It's just so fun, man. I love it.
No, I completely agree.
That's good.
There was what else was I going to say to you? There was something else about environment. No, I've lost it. I think if I remember, I'll come back to you. Yeah.
I think one thing I wanted to mention before was you were talking about coming into a new age now, and people are starting to see that, you know, old ways of doing things where it's just competition at all costs, you know, that kind of like dark side to capitalism. We're starting to change and see that, you know, I always consider these things from a multifactorial approach. It's not, you know, there are people that are absolutist out there and they say it's just because men oppress women, or it's just because capitalism is bad, or it's, you know, just because we need to protect the environment. Obviously these things are so complex. You know, one of the things women's emancipation. So, you know, but just technology as well, and having more autonomy over their reproduction, technology as well, meaning that we can all work from home. We don't have to pick up heavy things and build buildings and stand on the top of skyscrapers without any kind of protection gear. All these things are changing, and there's so many complex reasons as to why they are. Nevertheless, the fact that we are now starting to see that competition at all costs isn't what we want as a society. What we really want now, at least what I want, is more consciousness around what we're building and how we're creating, you know, and there's that social responsibility behind every product. You know, I'm not just going to, if I'm going to make something or use plastic, you know, a portion of that's going to go to the Amazon, or if I'm going to make these new lights, it's, you know, it's LED, it's healthy, it's good for the environment. That really excites me now. And I worry sometimes, or I try to consider as to whether or not I'm just in these really tight echo chambers surrounded by people that all believe and agree with me. But I do also at the same time think that it's not just who I'm surrounded by and what I see online. more people as we are becoming more and more connected are starting to recognize that these things affect all of us, you know?
Yeah, for sure. No, I agree. Yeah, and also one of the things I find most really frustrating is that some of the stuff isn't really, it's so difficult to get information or good quality information. There's a lot of misdirection, a lot of, you know, even our own algorithms that we use are designed to give us just more of what we like and what we search for. So therefore our cognitive bias becomes more and more. So rather than our minds expanding, if we're not mindful of it, it actually stays the same or actually starts to diminish, you know? And I think, but that being said, I think there is a lot of some really beautiful movements going on and things like that. So for me, I'm working in the investment field as well. I still have an investment company and I'm starting, you know, once we get to a certain amount, I think the idea is that we start looking at how we can create, because myself and my business partner are very much about creating win-wins. So win-wins for the clients, the introducers, and ourselves, obviously, and the people that we invest the products into. So it would be no different then in doing something that helps with, I don't know, using research for psilocybin or something like that for helping mental health or renewable energies or anything like that, because the structure is the same. We just create a structure and then work out how that is. And to go back into, to do something that goes back into helping is a real sort of value of mine. Maybe as I get older, I think it's always there, but I'm just thinking, just again, it's like creative relevant. And today I was having a conversation with my coach about one of the products that we're going to be doing where 50% will go back in, because it's men's work, 50% will go back into a men's health, mental health charity.
Yeah.
You know? So to me, it just makes sense. It's something about continuing that cycle. And they're at a moment where we're just so disjointed and separate and divided. That's why we have all this kind of illness. It feels like illness, and because we're not together. We're not like one kind of neuro-like network. Even though we are all one, and we're all connected. Yeah. It makes perfect sense, you know. I was with somebody the other day, and they were talking about. This is my coach. He uses a beautiful analogy. So he was a tree surgeon. So he starts. He was talking about how forests and everything else have like this kind of this network underneath. So if one tree is ill or under attack in one side of the forest, they can actually send that information goes through and it sends it that way to help. Mm-hmm. So. And that's how they thrive, and that's how it, you know. And for me, I was like, oh, it fills me with a bit of sadness when you realize what's going on in, you know, Brazil and the rainforest and stuff like that. And also, there's a thing called the HS2 over here. They're putting this massive electric train railroad, you know, chopping down a load of trees up in there. It's insane. But equally, I'm like, well, surely that when you look at any other organism, they all act that way. You know, and in fact, it's the same within our own human structure. But for some reason, we think there's such an individuation, there's such a separateness about us that it's just. I think also this is part of our shadow element. Is just that we can't do this on by ourselves. We're not meant to be. You know, so the community. I think it's got to come back around that way. I like the idea of community and working with community farmers and you getting your produce from community programs and things like that set up. It'd be nice to go back to that way, I think, where this big kind of conglomerate things that are just solely focused on capitalism won't work.
Yeah. One of the things I always try to figure out is where's the middle ground here? Like, where am I too biased to one side or too much, where am I too yin and not enough yang, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
In my early 20s, I was obsessed with Carl Jung and finding purpose and finding meaning. And I took on that very kind of individualistic approach to life. And, in the economic world, the political world, neoliberalism was making a hell of a lot of sense to me because power to the individual, you know, we can take freedom and rights over ourselves and we can do that. It still makes a hell of a lot of sense to me. But coming back to that sociocentric way of viewing the world, I still don't think that anything that you and I are talking about erodes a personal sense of self. I mean, take for what you just said, for example, you have consciously decided, if anyone can hear that, that's my partner making a smoothie in the background. Sorry about that. It's just like a really long, bizarre fart. I'm telling you, it's not that, guys. But that idea, you have, Kevin, consciously decided to give some of your earnings to men's health work. That is an individualistic decision, you know, that helps society at large. I would argue that what you do there provides more meaning in your life than someone out there just pursuing meaning at all costs, like I used to do it in my early 20s.
Yeah, I suppose it does. And I think, like you say, it's just, there's something about, I like doing it that way as well, because it's not about look at me or anything else like that. I will tell people that are buying this product, it's not me. I've just created something. This is the one. And that's my, I would say that's probably one of my gifts. I've created something. So some of your fans are going there. So it's not me that's doing it. You're doing it. You know what I mean? Exactly. Like, all right, better still, we're doing it.
Yeah.
So we're all helping each other. You're actually helping a guy you'll never ever meet.
Yeah.
How cool is that? How cool is that?
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? So, and I think that's that type of cyclical type of process. I'm very, like you say, I'm quite positive and very, you can be a bit utopian as well. So
we're all friends. Kumbaya.
So I'm thinking, why can't we do that? Why can't that happen in different areas, you know? There's going to be a collapse and crisis, you know, and part of the crisis. I think there's going to be a collapse first in order for us to have a look and think, okay, well, that didn't really work. What can we do now?
Yeah. And also looking back on the past with a sense of gratitude as well. And, you know, just because as a society now, hopefully we're not in our own echo chamber here, but as a society now, we're starting to see that capitalism at all costs, you know, without some kind of socialistic aspect to it, you know, whether that's healthcare or education or something, you know, if it's just pure capitalism, can leave a hell of a lot of people impoverished at the bottom. We're starting to see now that we have the technology available for us to switch things there. That doesn't mean, and this is me talking from what I believe, but it doesn't mean that capitalism in and of itself, it's bad. It's not. It's one of the only systems that we've had to date that has made both the poor rich and the rich rich. You know, it's not just communism where everyone suffered and millions and millions of people died. We don't want to go there, but can we, from that point that you were making there with a utopian mindset, well, surely if we have got this far, there's something else that we can even do. You know, there's something, who knows what kind of system, what kind of word, you know, we'll be using in 200 years. It's going to be even better. And we'll look back on capitalism and go, oh, yeah, that was working then, but we have this thing now, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's exciting times. What a time to be alive, man. What a time to be alive. It's definitely that. I think one of the things, for whatever reason, thinking about it as you were speaking then, there seems to be a lot of fear pushed. So there's the fear of losing something, or the fear of whatever, you know, feeling a certain way or feeling bad about something. There's a lot of our energy, our world is driven by that. Oh, you know, you're going to be poor if you don't do this, or you don't do that, or you're going to be, you know, extradited from this group, or all that type of stuff is, enforces our, you know, if we're not mindful of it, impacts our decisions on a daily basis, you know. So you can be quite, things are a bit tight, I need to do, and you're doing stuff out of either desperation or whatever, or doing something that you don't really want to do because you're actually being driven by the motivation is fear or a kind of away from behavior or you know, or thought process. Whereas don't get me wrong, I think it can be a springboard. But I don't think over long term, I don't think it can be sustained, you know, because the minute you get away from something, you kind of relax anyway. Whereas if you're looking to go for something, it's normally a longer process and there's always something else to go for. But you can do it in a way that's not dysfunctional. It's just like you're doing it from a space of like, I'm going towards love. Okay, great. I've got, what else would I love to create? What else would I love to create? You know? So rather than trying to run from something.
Does that come up a lot in men's work, that idea of when fear manifests itself, there's that male proclivity to fix the problem straight away.
Fix it, coming from 100%. Fear.
Yeah.
Every time, I need to fix it. What's going on?
Yeah.
You know, I need to fix my partner. She's having a meltdown. I need to fix this. And then, you know, my job's happened. I need to fix something else. You know, and it's, and if you can't, this is what a lot of the guys I work with, that if they that's the end of their world. You know, they make it about them. I can't fix this thing, so therefore I am less than. You know, when actually some things aren't, they're not for you to fix it in the first place, and then that you can have to separate yourself from the thing and your identity. You know.
Absolutely. But it's just, yeah, it's coming back to that. Man, are we too positive? Are you and I too
Maybe.
We should be more pessimistic. The world's fucked, everyone. We're going down. Oh, God. Hey, Kev, I asked this question to a guest from last week's show. I was wondering if I could ask it to you as well. If there's one thing, you can say two things if you'd like, that you want listeners to take away from the conversation today, what would it be?
Ooh, one thing I want listeners to take away from today. Probably that last point is to really pay attention to how your thoughts and your actions, where they're coming from. Where they're coming from. Are they geared towards love, or are they coming away from something or fearful? And also the thought and an action is like, especially coming away from something fearful, can mean that you might be the action to numb it, or you might be the action to try and avoid it, and those types of things as well. So we do all distract ourselves or make ourselves busy when actually there's something else going on. You know, when everyone's busy, that kind of badge of honor, like, oh, I'm
so busy.
Yeah, too. Yeah, yeah. I'm so busy. It's, yeah. It's, I think, yeah, because there's been a lot, and there's no, and my second thing would be, which kind of links the two, is like, there's a lot of, gold in deep inquiry, deep self-inquiry, which sometimes feels confronting and scary again, but it actually, if you're doing it from a place of, or wanting to understand yourself better and create, and therefore knowing for well you're going to create something better, then or create something that I love, then it's definitely a worthwhile pursuit. Mm. I think that slowing down is what for everybody is, if they've chosen to, have had to face within themselves. You know?
Mm. I love that, man. You have such a great energy about you. Like, I find that I'm very easily influenced by the podcast guests that I have on the show. And sometimes I have people that are full of energy. I'm like, oh my God, I've had 10 coffees. This is a crazy podcast. Speaking with you, I feel very zen. You know, I feel really calm. So it's great to have you, man.
Well, thank you, man. I appreciate that, brother. Yeah.
It's awesome.
Good to go on. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, it's good fun. It's good fun that we finally had the chat. What's coming up for you, Kev? What are some things that are coming up on the horizon?
What's coming up? Well, we're just concentrating on my men's work. We're going to do some stuff on, I'm doing some, trying to do some more podcasts as well. But yeah, we could be launching a series of products for men's work from, you know, and it's important for me to have something that's for everybody, you know, so at different price points. And that's what kind of our main focus at the moment, just to have a wider reach, you know? Yeah.
Super important, dude. Where can people find you? What are your links?
Living Full Project. I think that's living_project, something like that. Yeah, you'll find
it. I'll put it in the show notes anyway. But
on Instagram, Instagram. That's probably the best one. Or you can go, just shoot me an email on Kevin at thelivingfullproject.com. I'm happy to talk to anybody on there as well.
Brilliant. Mate, thank you so much. That was awesome.
Pleasure, bro. Anytime. Really enjoyed that conversation. So thanks for the work you do as well.
Yeah, mate. Love it. Love it. Guys, thank you so much for listening. I'll speak to you next week. Bye.